Welcome to the Umbrella Hour. This is Dr. On, clinical sexologist with Xander Kagg, licensed clinical social worker. Xander will do the honors and introduce our guest this hour.
Yes, I will. Thank you so much, On. Hello, everybody. Our guest today is Aidan Key. Aidan is the author of Trans Children in Today's Schools, published by Oxford University Press. He's also the founder and director of Gender Diversity. Welcome to the show, Aidan.
Well, thank you, Xander and On. It's great to be here, and I really appreciate the invitation to talk about this important subject.
Oftentimes, when I know the guests, I mention it at the top of the interview, and we might recollect a little bit. I was trying to think back to, and I think we played this game before when we first met, and I believe it was my very first time going to Gender Odyssey in 2006, I believe it was. Up in Seattle. And then I went 9 times over a 10-year span. There was 1 year it was canceled, I remember. I was quite bummed. I believe that's where we met, was at that conference.
I do believe so. And my recollection is you've always, at the Gender Odyssey conference, you presented on any number of topics that always caused a bit of a stir. And so even that very first one, I remember the selection committee for the programming had some feelings and thoughts about your submission. And I said, well, what part of our stated mission does this not include? A thoughtful exploration of gender. So to me, it was a no-brainer that it would come in. I think that's the beauty that you brought to our conference.
If I remember correctly, the very first workshop I proposed and then ended up facilitating was talking about this exploration of gender, and in particular, using this word virago, which not at that time, but previously in my life, I had owned a virago motorcycle. I believe it was a Kawasaki, and virago just means masculine or mannish woman. I thought, what an interesting concept. And I didn't know if anybody else would find it interesting, but so many people came to that workshop and they were saying things that people weren't saying back then, but are very common today, which is, I shouldn't have to change my name. I shouldn't have to take hormones. I shouldn't have to have surgeries. But back then, that was almost unheard of. Bordering on taboo, if not smack dab in the middle of taboo. That was 2005 or six, 2006.
I remember it all also. And not only that, we just shouldn't have to discard the identifiers or labels that we embraced at one point just to add another. That's my two cents. I happen to think that that's a beautiful way to do my own life and to share my own experience with others.
I was talking with somebody yesterday and I said, I've used the terms trans man, FTM, which is older in use, female to male transsexual language. I said, but if I were to just come up with my own, I've decided, and I came up with this a few years ago, really my transition was from dyke to dude. That's my language, D to D.
I love it. There's
because,
a lot of folks out there.
Right, because what's really interesting to me about that is the dyke part, the strong woman, lesbian component of me, the experience in that community, I didn't take that out and put it on a shelf. Right. It's still very much part of me. And it's the part of me that probably gets me in trouble, because in lesbian space, it was all about speak up, speak out, speak your truth, challenge the system. When you look and sound like I do, it's not interpreted in the same way. Now it's, oh, you need to sit down and shut up, man. And so I think that gets me in trouble.
Yeah, you and I and many people out there are faced with similar shifts in perception and how we're received when the dyke community that perhaps many of us came from were the ones who taught us how to be strong, how to find our voice, and how to essentially be the leaders that we are today. I always give a nod to my community, whether they're excited about it or not. A number of them are very, very happy and proud of the work that I've done. They're still in my life. And so I love to give credit where credit is due and talk about who my teachers and mentors were.
Absolutely.
They taught me how to do it.
Absolutely. Nowadays, you're working with families and kids and educators. So there's a little bit of an evolution. There was Gender Odyssey, and then there was Gender Odyssey Family. And I remember when the family component came on and the professionals component came on. Separate conferences in one space in Seattle. And so the family conference started small and then just grew and grew and grew. And it was a substantial part of the time in Seattle. And so did you jump off from the family conference part of the work that you were doing? Is that where transfamilies.org came from and gender diversity? Give us a little bit of the evolution of how you started Trans Families and Gender Diversity Incorporated.
Sure. The Gender Odyssey Conference, the first one, 2001, was my effort to get more than the handful of people that I had in Seattle, Washington, get more than a handful of people around me. I wanted to hear the stories of others, see how they were doing things, see what life might look like, because I had no idea what kind of future I might have. I was early in my transition as well. That was the impetus. And so as that conference progressed, I found that a couple of parents were starting to show up. 2004, I think, was the first conference that had some families show up with their teenagers. And I'll never forget this father who I assumed, because of his whiteness and his cis male identity and heterosexuality and social class status, that he had everything at his fingertips that he could possibly need, except there he was coming to my conference, traveling across state lines to say, what do I do about my kid, Aiden? And seeing his fear and his love all at the same time. So it was a pretty big game changer for me because it shifted my thinking. And I thought, I can pull together a conference with several hundred people. Who does he have? And what about his kid? I don't know. The conference had no programming for teenagers or anyone younger, for sure. The programming had no sessions for him as a parent. I don't know what else to call it, except it shifted my heart. And that meant, instead of where I thought I was going with the conference, which was continuing to delve into the world of adults and not only our exploration of our gender, but how does that intersect with the other parts of our lives and other parts of our identities, my heart and my attention kept being pulled to those families. That said, I started a support group in Seattle. Two families showed up to the first one. Another family showed up to the second one. And then it just cascaded since then. Bringing those parents into the room, I thought, well, I sure hope I can help. I'm not sure how to raise a trans child either, but I knew that I could help provide them some information they didn't have and perspective that they didn't have. If you're going to an expert, say that's a medical provider or a mental health provider, please take the word expert into thoughtful consideration, because somebody could adopt the term expert having only seen one person before. That was the case with my own medical doctor, who consulted with an expert who had only seen one patient before. So for that, you know, that was a game changer. I wanted those parents to understand where they were at a moment in time. Fast forward, the programming, like you said, really expanded. It really popped out. The kids program, absolutely phenomenal. The teen program, stellar. And it takes only half a second from a parent saying, well, I guess I could possibly be ready to support my kid, for them to say, how do I send my kid out the door to go to school? Mm-hmm. I can support them, but how do I send them out into the world? And that is where the training work within K through 12 schools began. And trust me, those folks were pretty overwhelmed and terrified themselves.
I bet. I remember in the early days of Trans Youth Family Allies, or TYFA, which a lot of those parents used to come to Gender Odyssey. And I think some of them were involved in helping put on workshops and things, and maybe even more than that. And I remember the work that I did with them on a few occasions of going into the schools. This was the early days of all of that. What school doesn't do something like that? Now we would automatically think. But back then, this was not happening on a, I was going to say large scale, but I mean, it was happening on a small scale. It was barely happening. So you were ahead of the curve in that way.
When did you start this organization?
I would say, as far as hanging up a shingle, it was back in 1999.
Okay. Do you think you had influenced Gender Spectrum?
I was the co-founder of Gender Spectrum.
Had no idea.
Yeah. Well, that might be a story for today. It might be another story. But the foundation of it, with Stephanie Brill, we met each other. She came to the Gender Odyssey Conference and said, wow, Aiden, you have this great conference. And I've got a group with parents and children that need something like this. Can we explore that? And I said, are you showing up with one more idea for more work that I can do? Or are you in the game with me here? Are you going to help do this? And Stephanie said, absolutely, I'm in. And we just got together like peas in a pod and started dreaming and visioning and laying the foundation for that. So the early days of the gender spectrum history and gender odyssey history are linked in that the first conference was in 2007, and it was called the Gender Odyssey Family Conference. And at some point we rebranded to call it the Gender Spectrum Family Conference. And then things happened. And there was financial troubles with Gender Spectrum, that with the funding. To what degree, I still don't fully understand. That was not part of my purview, but it meant that we had to part ways. And Stephanie continued in California, and I continued in Washington. So we've grown side by side together. But the first 3+ years were some very hard, long days of building website, creating programming, producing a conference, starting groups, etc. So yeah, how's that for an answer?
Wow. So you know Joel Baum then? Who left since then. Yeah.
Okay. Joel was our third hire.
Okay.
Yeah.
I always enjoyed going to the Gender Spectrum Conference because I was living in the San Francisco Bay Area. Mm-hmm. So I was going up to Seattle. But when I lived in the Bay Area, I would go to also to Gender Spectrum because I could present there or help out with something on that side. I mostly liked going to the professional side at that conference. It wasn't like Gender Odyssey where there was an adult conference. It was families, teens, kids, providers.
Right.
So I was going in on the provider side and then doing some volunteer work, which I enjoyed doing as well. Yeah. It's nice when it's there. I remember the first couple of times I went to it, it was at the Berkeley Marina, and then it moved out to, was it St. Mary's College?
It's amazing I didn't run into you.
We were probably there at the same time. We just didn't. We didn't know each other because Ann and I met briefly back in 2014 when my Manning Up book was released. And Ann was there at the book launch reading, filming a documentary that included Willie Wilkinson. Mm-hmm. I moved to Jacksonville and I think Willie told me, I have a friend in Jacksonville. That's how we connected. So,
well, I just saw Willie last month at Camp Lost Boys, and Rocco, who's one of the people that the primary person organizing those camps, got to see him, and he was part of Gender Odyssey and all of that. One of the things about those early days of work with families was stepping into a school for the first time, and that was in the Bay Area. And to this day, I've yet to meet a trans person that stepped in to do school training any earlier than that. It was pretty profound to do that. And even in my book, The Trans Children in Today's Schools, one of the very first stories that I mention is exactly one of those, or several of those schools in the Bay Area who were just requesting training and very, very lost. So my goal with the book was to share as many of those experiences as I possibly could, because they touch on so many different facets of the experience. First of all, there's the kid just wanting to go to school and be accepted and included for who they are. But if you have a hassle of adults around that kid that have no idea how to even get the kid's name correct or pronoun correct, much less how to address questions that might come up, then you're leaving the kid out in the wild, essentially, on their own. So then the dynamics between the parents and the administrators and or teachers at school, there's a special dynamic there that exists in any school, regardless of the gender of the child. But there's also this fearful, passionate, driven parent attempting to carve that space for their child, and then a school community that's essentially also fearful and hesitant because they don't recognize that they have the majority of the tools that they need to do it. They already have them. So I've put all sorts of those types of stories in there, including those early days. And I'll tell you, with respect to a number of these schools, since time has passed, those schools and districts that keep building on that understanding, they've done so brilliantly, and we're discovering new things. So those are a smattering of schools that got an early start, are doing great and still learning. By and large, the rest of the nation is still back in those early days of when I started 17 years ago in schools. It's been quite an adventure.
When I first started doing classroom presentations as just a member of the LGBT community, or at the time it was just gay and lesbian community. And we would be sitting on a panel in front of a big classroom, maybe like psychology class at a college. And it was pretty common for at least one person in the room to ask the question, when did you choose to be gay? Right? That was a very common question. I'm talking about 1988, 89, 90. I heard that question a few times over the years, and then I started moving around and I was doing talks in all these different places. And then I came back to that same city, which was San Diego, and it had been about 20 to 25 years since I had lived there, and I had at least done a college classroom presentation. And somebody asked the question, when did you choose to be gay? And I thought, wow, here we are. You know, I started thinking, well, that's because this is a college classroom. These are people who have come from all over the country and the world. They've come to this place. And so 25 years later, it's still the same question. At the time, it felt like there had been no progress made. Of course, there's lots of progress, but it felt strange to be asked that same question all those years later in that same place, the same university, in the same city. Let's back up a little bit about your book. I'd like to know, just as a published author myself, I'm always fascinated in how it came to be. Did you decide to write a book and look for a publisher? Did a publisher come to you? Were people begging you for a book? You just had to get it out of your head? What's the story behind the book?
An email crossed my desk about the anthology Trans Bodies, Trans Selves, the first edition, and that the editors were looking for contributors. The email I got was, we're still looking for some. We have things largely in place. And I went, darn it. How did I miss this? But I had missed it. And so I wrote in and said, I would love to contribute a sidebar or something, and played a gender card, which was that the book was to be authored by the trans and gender diverse community members, by and for. And so the chapter on trans children was being co-authored by two cisgender people. And so I said, is it possible that you can add a trans voice to that chapter? And so they said, let's find out. And the co-authors were amenable and excited. And essentially one of them said, oh, I just talk while the other one writes, or and the other one's doing the writing. And the one that was doing the writing said, if you want to take this and run with it, Aiden, go for it. So I did. I took it and ran with it and authored that first chapter, which the folks at Oxford and the editors referred to as the cornerstone of the book, which was pretty powerful. When that book release came and I had a chance to meet the Oxford editor assigned to the book, I said, hey, I have got so much more to write about. Would you consider a book? And he said, well, hey, no offense, Aiden, but you don't have the PhD or the MD after your name. And we are an academic press. And I said, that's who I'm teaching. That's who's coming to me for knowledge and instruction. And he said, well, go ahead and put together a book proposal and let's see what happens. So I did. I put together a book proposal. And here's the thing. You have to include a sample chapter. So I'm thinking, I know what people ask. They ask about bathrooms, especially at that time. And I can't just start with bathrooms without laying some groundwork. And so I essentially crafted what could have been a standalone, smaller book on gender access, gender inclusion, why bathrooms are at the crux of the conversation. And it must have worked because I'm also thinking, who are the reviewers here? What kind of foundational knowledge are they going to have? Probably not. Let me provide that. Boom, they did say yes. I was so excited to get that yes, and then spent a long, long time writing it. Maybe even actively, probably for 3 years, but in fits and starts even prior to that for maybe five. So I was worried that it would be a redundant book because there could be any number of other books that were put out about children in schools, but the field is still really wide open. It was hard to write also because I'm trying to think of who is my audience. My primary audience are those educators, teachers in schools, counselors, administrators, people going into the field of teaching. They're in college still. They're wanting to learn or to gain deeper knowledge there. That's who my primary audience was. But also I wanted parents to read the book so that they could better navigate the schools when they step in to speak with their school administrators. The Oxford Press, they said, but no, your primary audience is parents of trans kids. And I said, no, it's not. And then we arm wrestled a little bit and we found that the way I was writing it was going to work regardless. So that's the backstory with the book. I passed it in front of a number of people whose opinions I respect very highly. Dr. Christina Olson of the Trans Youth Project, Andrew Solomon, author of Far From the Tree and a very well-known author himself. And they wrote some pretty glowing reviews for me for the book. So that felt really good because, you know, they don't have to. And now it's out there.
We will be taking our first commercial break. This is Dr. On with Xander Keg. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour. Our guest this hour is Aidan Key, who is the author of Trans Children in Today's Schools, Oxford University Press. We'll be back after this commercial.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet mixed with water and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colors or preservatives, just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UKRADIO to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active, super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our first commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. Our guest is Aidan Key, author of Trans Children in Today's Schools. Let's pick up where we left off.
And they wrote some pretty glowing reviews for me for the book. So that felt really good because, you know, they don't have to. And now it's out there. The stars were aligned for me. And let me also say that what I really wanted to do with this book was to put down onto paper what I experience when I step into schools. And that has more to do with what is our common ground? What do we want for all kids? And how does that work when we have a complicated and controversial element in the mix? And to be as compassionate as possible for those who are deeply resistant. I understand that resistance. I've been observing it for a long, long time. I've observed in myself in earlier years my resistance to accepting the experiences of trans people also. And so that internal reflection, if I'm judging someone else, I'm judging myself. And I share that with them in my presentations. And I think that really helps keep people listening. I think it helps keep their hearts open. So that we can say, we're learning, we're discovering, we're finding some things that are working, and we can continue to learn, reflect, revise if we need to. And here's the thing that I love the most, which is if they see me as the trans guy from Seattle showing up to their community to tell them how to do it, that's not what's happening. I'm there to help them with their children. These are families in their communities. These are their grandchildren. The teachers have taught their siblings. The teachers, if they've been there long enough, have also instructed their parents in a class when the parents were little. These are their people. If I show them that while also showing them that there's a shift in our understanding of gender, that we have to stop ignoring the gender differences that we already know exist. They're not up for debate. We have to consider the notion of gender identity and that science is progressing in terms of its understanding there as well. And if we can do that, then we can look after kids yesterday and today and hopefully tomorrow. And that's what I try to present to them and inspire in them is that love and compassion that they have for their own.
I'm pretty sure that bringing humility into it makes it much more successful because people, we don't like to feel judged.
No, we do not.
You mentioned that sometimes there's that resistance and you recognize that we all have periods of resistance, maybe even on the same subjects. One of the things that I'm always curious about, especially in public schools, is that there is a really interesting intersection of responsibilities with a teacher who's a public school teacher, government employee. They don't have freedom of speech in the classroom because they're agents of the government. They're not their own personal self. And they're protected by the First Amendment. They can't be compelled to say certain words. A teacher can't be mandated to use pronouns that are requested by the student or the teacher because they can't bring their own thing into the classroom, but they can not say things that people are requiring them to say. It seems like a very interesting type of law to parse that out. My curiosity is more around how you might handle a teacher or somebody who might say that a teacher can't be compelled. Because you said something about if teachers can't get the pronouns and the name right, well, they can't be mandated to get those things right. They've actually won lawsuits now where schools have lost because they've tried to punish teachers who wouldn't use the name and the pronouns that the student or the parents were requesting. What would be a way to talk about that or to the individual themselves that might open up the possibility that they would consider using a name or a pronoun that they feel resistant to? Because I think most people that I know who do trainings would be very angry at that person and might not even want to deal with them at all. And I've known you long enough, you're not that kind of person. How would you talk to somebody who's got that resistance, but also has the right to refuse?
I want them motivated by their heart, not by the law. Yeah. And in my work, I can look up the legal protections state by state, wherever I go, if I want to, and know the lay of the land for that particular state. And I could bring that into the discussion, but by and large, I don't, because I do not want that to be the motivator. And for lawsuits being won or lost, they're varying all over. So there are lawsuits that have been lost because a teacher would not use a correct pronoun or ensure the safety and the privacy needs of their students. Rather than wait for all of that to play out and have some courts weigh in, federal decisions here, federal district courts or Supreme Court or whatever, they're your children. These are children in your community. The request is simple, and the request is just as simple as any other student asking for use of a particular name, for example. Teachers honor name changes all the time. They make exceptions only for trans students, because they personally are deciding something based on their understanding of the gendered nature of it. But even that gets complicated because there are girls out there with the name Aiden. There are girls out there with the name Michael or any other names that we have typically associated with boys. So how are we going to pin this down? We're not going to be able to, nor should we. So when it comes down to it, teachers are tasked with creating a safe, inclusive learning environment that's for all kids, regardless of their gender, regardless of their faith leanings, their political constitution of their families, any number of things. And we struggle with that as well. I think back to when I was 11 and moving from, as a young child, I lived in a very racially diverse school district in Los Angeles. My family moved to Denver for a year while I was 11. They were busing the almost exclusively, at least half of the white kids to the almost exclusively black kids' school, and vice versa. And from my little 11-year-old standpoint, I didn't have any problem with that conceptually. But what I saw was the adults very angry and upset about it. The teachers paralyzed with fear, unable to act in situations that needed their intervention. I watched a lot of violence on a little elementary school playground that should not have been happening because adults were afraid to intervene. All we as kids knew is that kids from one school were coming to the new school, and that was a problem, and that our skin color had something to do with it. So I very much remember that time and bookmarked it in my brain, not only for my own understanding of the complexity of racial discrimination and the efforts at inclusion and seeing the resistance, but I saw the same thing when I stepped into a school in California, 75 plus teachers, administrators who were going to have a student come back from the winter break as a girl with a new name and will be using she and her pronouns. So we essentially had this emergency training to prepare them for it. What happened in this meeting was a teacher raised her hand and said, well, we have one student in our school who's a big man on campus, and the students really look up to him, and whatever he says goes. And he's really homophobic. So I'm afraid that when this other student comes back to school, this is going to hit the fan. And I watched the other 75 heads in the room nod up and down. So what I'm witnessing standing in front of them is 75 plus adults giving over their power to one student and not intervening. And I reflected that back to them. And I don't know how well I did it, but I've done it very well since then in terms of bringing that story over and over into the environment where what you have is not weighing in one way or the other on LGBTQ rights or not, or gender inclusive or not, or waving the trans flag or not. This is not picking a side. This is interrupting bad behavior, and you need to do it. So that's the important piece. Is it okay for him to make homophobic comments? No, it isn't. Is it okay for him to make racist comments? No, it isn't. Is it okay for him to belittle any student for any reason that has to do with their identity, their experience, their family? No, it isn't. So that's the core that we can all embrace. We're creating that safe, inclusive learning environment for all students. What students do look for is hesitancy or inconsistency. And if they're seeing that, they're going to double down. And that's not going to serve that kid with that difference, whether it's a gender difference or a racial difference or whatever. It's not going to serve them well. That's the core foundation from which I would like them to be motivated. They use the pronouns the other kids want. Why not just do it all across the board? Why not step in? Because I'll tell you what, and this is also what I share with them, this is not my agenda. This is not some gay agenda or some woke agenda. This is the children themselves wanting more breathing room, wanting things that we wanted when we were younger, but didn't have the same language to articulate. And that is more room to be their authentic selves and not have gender restrictions being placed on them. And what's wrong with a they and them pronoun? It gives a lot of breathing room to not be pigeonholed. It's not saying that they're necessarily going on some gender transition at 9 years old, which will the following year end with genital surgery. Can we take a deep breath here? It just means that they like that notion. That is a generational paradigm shift that is occurring. So you can listen to me or not, but if you're not being attentive to your children and to your grandchildren, they will leave you behind.
We had quite a challenge here in Florida. To my utter amazement, being able to have a conversation, for instance, with the school was impossible. So my partner and I, we experienced her older child going through a transition. And since then, she's reversed everything. We were supportive. We weren't sure if this really was where she was headed, but we referred to male pronouns and we supported him at the time. And it was very interesting because she, at the time, before officially announcing that she wanted to transition, was already exhibiting some anxiety about it. So we did not want to add to that. We wanted to be casual about it and give her some good direction. So now he's in school. He has the support of the students, but he had endless trouble with faculty. We set up a school meeting. We worked with the attorney who my partner knew. We went to the school offices and we met their attorney and we reported everything that we had experienced as parents. So what we experienced was being ignored, not even being acknowledged, being left out in the hallway, having to seek some confirmation. Where is this dean? Said he would meet with us and didn't show up. And then we ended up being redirected. Then we got referred to the vice principal by the school secretary. It was very disappointing. And we just, for some reason, just weren't being taken very seriously. And that was bothersome because we should be able to have civil conversation, but it just wasn't going very well. Now, fast forward, about a year into it, my partner's other child, during class time, was asked, because they were having some conversations, apparently, that fell in line with this particular question that this student asked the entire class, well, what is gender identity? What is it? They attempted to, and she was one of them, attempted to explain it, and they were shut down and told to be quiet. It was very upsetting to the students because they thought they had done something wrong. They felt they had violated some rule that wasn't spoken or known about ahead of time. It was very bothersome to the younger daughter. And over time, Xander and I, since we've lived here, we've seen new rules come about. And I'm very familiar with this system. I've been through this system a couple of times now. And we went through another process at another school. And it was just unbelievable. When I was involved with PFLAG for a very short interval, I was asked to show up. There was a trans family and was mom, dad. They were very worried about the changes. Because of the ruling, they grew very anxious because they were told, even though she looks like a girl, walks like a girl, talks like a girl, is every bit a girl, she was not allowed to use the female restroom. And so that redirected her to have to go to the school nurse to use the restroom, minus all the late arrivals for classes because of the rerouting and et cetera. So it's very complicated, I think, for parents today. It's a bit unnerving, especially when the system isn't schooled in how to talk with anxious parents. And I think a lot of the reactions or the lack thereof that we were experiencing was just that. They didn't know how to really deal with the issues. Rather than admit that, they ignored it and fell into inadequate type of behavior that just wasn't reaching people and certainly not us. I am concerned about parents today and what they're experiencing because I know those conversations have not improved and we do need to have more people step up and be able to hold those conversations. But as Xander was pointing out, there's some strict guidelines. There's consequences.
Here's some thoughts that I have. There are entities out there, political think tanks and ultra-conservative agendas, really striving very hard to stoke fear. And what you are bumping up against there in the past, with you and your partner with the child, is very much that fear of actually examining an issue. Large dollars are going towards that, using all tools possible. Essentially, as a society, we're at the mercy of that because it is difficult to know the way through. That is a significant thing to counter. And I really enjoyed my time stepping into very conservative environments and having great success. The same success I had in politically liberal environments. They're the same people, by and large. They have the same questions. Those questions deserve answering. They deserve exploration. How do we find our way through? Logic tells us the kid with the penis goes to use the boys' room. That's only because we've done it that way. We take a look at kids visually, and we divvy them up, and it does not make sense for that child with the penis to go into the boys' room for so many reasons, especially her safety. So we need logic to come into this, but fear does not inspire logical thinking. And I don't know what to say about that, except that's part of the reason I felt if I do anything in this life, I have to finish this book, because I do show the pathway, at least a beginning pathway of success. And I have stepped into very conservative environments and very liberal environments. And I'm finding teachers who care about their students, students who think, what's the problem? What's the big deal? I don't understand. Administrators who are scared to lead because it might mean their job. School board members who will not take a stand because they'll be voted out of the school board the next cycle. I don't want fear to drive the important decisions that need to be made for these children and for their peers. It's not just like you're mentioning the kid that was asking the question about gender identity. Excellent question.
We will be taking our second commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour. This is Dr. On with Xander Keg, and our guest this hour is Aidan Key. Aidan is author of Trans Children in Today's Schools. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the Skin Comfort Formula online and in stores now.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck. Fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our second commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. Our guest this hour is Aidan Key, who is founder of transfamilies.org, a national organization offering crucial support for families of gender-diverse children. Let's get back to where we left off.
As a matter of fact, I think one of the keys to the success that I've had in schools is by sitting with those adults and saying, we have to spend time understanding what we're talking about and when we're talking about it. So there's how a person looks, what body parts they actually have. There's also gender identity. Hey, new kid, we got to look at this concept. Let's go ahead and step into it. And then sexual orientation. Why are we talking about that when it comes to the gender identity of a kid? We don't need to talk about the sexuality of that child. We don't need to talk about their private parts, their genitals. And yet when you see people protesting gender inclusion efforts, they're holding signs that say, do not allow graphic sex ed in kindergartens. Well, there's no one I know that's going in and doing that. And it's certainly, if I have the privilege and honor of stepping in with those amazing kindergartners, we're not going there at all. We're talking about who they are, what's important to their identity, what people can tell by looking at them, and what people can't tell by looking at them that's important to their identities. Those conversations with children are brilliant. If I could capture those on film and push them out to the world, this conversation would be done because they show us how we can talk about gender identity differences quite easily. I don't go in there and define the term gender identity for the little kids. I say, who are you on the inside? I take the language the kids themselves have provided to me. And then I also think it's so important to bring in those other elements of our identities, our experiences. As a matter of fact, one classroom, the teachers were all giving me the heads up. These students are really tough. We all have a difficult time with them. Their behavior is often out of control. And I'm scared. I don't know. You know, that's not my expertise to corral a larger group of young children. But we went in there to talk about one of their classmates who was moving from Joey to Joanna. And just a quick explanation about that, that Joanna is letting us know that in her heart and in her mind, she's a girl and wants to start using that name Joanna now. And she's worried that you're going to tease her. And so we talked about teasing and how many of the kids by show of hands have been teased about something. All the hands go up, of course. And we invited them to share how it felt when they got teased. Sad, mad. That was it. Sometimes both. And if they wanted to share, what were the things that they were experiencing? One kid said, I'm the tallest kid in the class and I'm a girl. So I get teased about that. One kid said, my family moved from Korea last year and I didn't know English. Kids teased me about that. Kids tease me because my dad's in prison. Kids tease me because my family eats different food than everyone else. Kids tease me because I have two dads. Kids tease me because I have a skin tag on my neck. I remember practically every single thing that each of those kids said because it was so powerful. And I've never seen them love each other so much. And this whole conversation, all of it, took about 25 minutes. And I watched kids go up to each other afterwards and say, I'm one of the people that teased you. I want to tell you how sorry I am and that I will never do it again. And this is the problem group of students. I think they were so desirous of being accepted. And they were such a beautifully diverse group of kids that all they were doing was trying to be accepted by hurting each other. And they found a pathway to do something different. Now tell me that's something that should be legislated against. Not in my book.
That's a really beautiful story. And I think you're right. If something like that could be captured on video and shown to people, they would have a better understanding. And I'm sure you must know this. Not all of the people who go into the classrooms do it the way you do it. So that's part of the issue, too, is there are some amongst us who do things differently that catch the attention of the people who don't want any of us there in those environments. We can't solve that issue right now, but it happens.
The learning I experienced as I traveled my path with respect to gender, and I'm like, but how is it related to sexuality, or is it? And of course, they intersect for us as adults. We add those layers as we mature. So yes, those conversations are part of our experience, but I essentially have to remember personally and remind the other adults in the room what it's like to be a kid. As children, we were not interested in talking about our genitals with anyone that I recall. I know I wasn't, nor was I remotely interested in hearing about any type of sexual practices. But boy, I sure did want to be able to play the sports I wanted to play, or do the activities, or wear the clothing that was my clothing, that really was my favorite shirt or whatever, without being told I couldn't because I was a girl. Everyone has a story that touches on that, something they're told they could or couldn't do, or they were pushed in a certain way. So this is a universal effort at creating a better environment for all of us. And let's just remember how to keep it simple, because that's what the kids need. We as adults, we can sit down and we can start talking about these layers that do come in. And I think those are fantastic conversations.
Well, Aiden, we are at the top of the hour. It's been such a pleasure to see you again and to talk with you and hear all about what you've been up to. And I just want to say thank you for the work that you're doing. I'm sure many, many people appreciate it, especially those families that you're working with and for. So thank you very much. Before we officially close out, is there anything that you want to talk about what you've been up to?
The next step post book writing is to actually take that book and develop it into curriculum for school districts to train their educators, seeking funding for that, working on extracting content from the book and putting it into online learning systems, and see if I can't help get the word out more. So stay tuned for that. That's my next adventure. Well, thank you both for such an amazing conversation.
You have been listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. Ahn and Xander Kagg. And our guest this hour was Aidan Key, who is the author of Trans Children in Today's Schools. Thank you for listening.